Now please join me in prayer. Amen. It was a beautiful day. Oh my Lord, it was such a beautiful day. Do you remember? Bright and sunny, that perfect late summer September morning, not unlike today, though a little warmer, as I recall, maybe even brighter, maybe even sunnier. I was living at the time in an apartment right on the lake, overlooking the lake with eastern windows, and every morning, on a clear morning, my living room exploded with the golden fire of the sunrise, and it was one of those kinds of mornings. I'd gotten up early. We had staff meeting at the church that morning, so I'd gotten up extra early to do some workout, some yoga in my living room, bathed in that golden light, and as my workout was coming to a close and I was getting ready to get into the shower to get ready for church that day, I heard Bob Edwards on the NPR say that a plane had flown into one of the Twin Towers. I thought it was an aviation accident he was talking about, one of those little, you know, prop planes, a Cessna or something, or maybe a business jet gone off course. As I finished my shower, though, and got dressed, and Bob Edwards told me about a second plane crashing into the second tower, it became clear pretty quickly that something else was going on altogether, that it wasn't an accident, whatever was happening. We didn't have a lot of answers, but we knew it was something major. We had staff meeting that morning. It was like it is here, the very beginning of the church year, and so on the agenda, I had all kinds of items about the classes we were going to offer and the special programs, the schedules, and the calendar for the fall. Of course, all of that agenda was set aside. We all got to the office, the staff. And it seems to me that there were probably three questions that were on all of our minds. What does it mean? What does it even mean for me? I went to college with a lot of people who end up working in places like the Twin Towers. Had I lost anyone that I knew? What was my personal reaction? What were we as a church going to do to serve the needs of the people who would come? We talked about an ecumenical community-wide service for, I think it was even that evening. We had our own vigil in the church. We left the doors of the sanctuary open so people could come in and sit and pray and talk and be together. But the third question, of course, is the one that was the hardest to answer. How much has changed in this very morning? What's different that will never be the same again? In the days that followed, of course, some of these questions became clearer, others became much more acute. All of the planes were grounded, and the skies over Chicago, I don't know if you remember this, were filled with military planes, jets, and helicopters. President Bush spoke very meaningfully and movingly about need for healing and community, and about the importance of not rushing to judgment against any particular kinds of people, and certainly not against a venerable religion of peace. But slowly, or maybe not so slowly, that sense of early we don't know turned into a sense of victimization, a sense of resolve, a sense of thirst for justice, and maybe even for retribution. At that early time, of course, we were too much full of the pain of the experience to be able to entertain the harder questions, the critical voices, the wondering, why did this happen? But as time has passed now, maybe 15 years later, on this, the 15th anniversary of that day, maybe we can ask those questions. What happened? And why? And what does it mean for us? What changed that day? It's so interesting that this prophecy from Jeremiah is the one suggested to us by the lectionary today. You have to remember the job of a prophet in the Bible. The job of the prophet is not really to foretell the future. That's the least interesting thing that prophets do, is warn you about what's going to happen if. The prophet's job is not so much to foretell the future as to offer an opportunity to reflect. Not so much about giving you a warning as it is to ask you to look for an explanation of things. The job of a prophet is really to hold up a mirror to society. If you want to know how things got this way, the prophet says, look at what happened and why. At that time it will be said to the people and to Jerusalem, Jeremiah writes, a hot wind comes from me. When Jeremiah says me, he's speaking for the divine. That's the voice of God. A hot wind blows out of me, out of the bare heights in the desert toward my poor people, not to winnow, not to cleanse. No, it's a wind too strong for that. Now it is I, again, the voice of God, who speak judgment against them, for my people are foolish and they do not know me. They are stupid children and have no understanding. They are skilled in doing evil, but do not know how to do good. And we wonder, is there wisdom for us here after those September 11th attacks? After those attacks 15 years ago, did we do things that were foolish or stupid or evil? But certainly, we failed to understand the people that we were working with in the Middle East. Certainly, we failed to understand a billion people of our fellow creatures of God. We failed to understand the secular dictators like Saddam Hussein or the Salafist clerics of the Saudi regime. We failed to understand that we can't create democracy at gunpoint. Is there something there that we needed to confess, that we need to learn from? Was our support for secular dictatorships over the years an invitation to radical fundamentalism? And I don't mean to say that radical fundamentalism is an acceptable alternative or was a good choice or is anything other than a horrifying thing. But perhaps we failed to understand how our own way of inserting ourselves into that world paved the way for some of those kinds of reactions. The prophet demands that we ask those kinds of questions. The prophet does not come to foretell events, but to hold up a mirror to the people and ask them to see themselves, ask us to see ourselves more truly. Could we have been a more noble people, a more compassionate people, a more loving people? When God looked on Judah, according to Jeremiah, God sees a land laid waste and a void. God sees the heavens gone dark, and God sees the mountains quaking and the fruitful land turned into a desert, and all the cities laid into ruins. And perhaps we should have been paying more attention to the poor and the deserted people of the Middle East, for whom the heavens had gone dark, for whom the land felt waste and void, for whom their cities were laid in ruins. As we think about our role as followers of Jesus for building up God's kingdom, God's reign on earth, we have to focus on reversing that kind of damage, on stopping the oppressions of the hateful, on bringing peace to those quaking mountains, on restoring the desert to being fruitful land for all, on rebuilding the cities that have been laid waste. But first, we have to start by looking in the mirror. Other people have done great evil, yes, and they have done great evil to us. But who are we? And how did we end up here? That's the deeper question that the prophet invites us to ask 15 years later. Not finally, what happened to us, but rather, who have we become? Have we become more open, more disclosed, or have we become more secretive, more paranoid? Well, it's gone both ways, I think. Have we become stronger and more resilient, or have we become more brittle and more fearful? 15 years later, it's safe and it's important to ask, why did they hate us so? But also to ask, how did we overlook these people and their suffering? And what about how we treat each other in our society? There's lots of reasons for why society seems so broken down, especially in the face of this horrifying election season that we're all sort of white-knuckling our way through right now. But how shrill and how brittle we've become in the last 15 years. And did the shock of our vulnerability, the shocking discovery of our vulnerability on that day, make us harder, harder-hearted people? When you discover you're vulnerable, you have a couple of choices, right? You can put up walls of defense and paranoia and try to keep out that harmful world and keep it away that it never hurts you again. And maybe you'll even succeed in that. But if that's the choice you make, your heart gets smaller and more fragile. Or your other option when you discover your vulnerability is you can cultivate it as an asset. You can embrace it as something true about your nature, as a creature of God, as a child of God, dependent on God's invulnerability. You can use your vulnerability as a road into the world around you. At our best, we handle our vulnerability by acknowledging it and by accepting it and by becoming more vulnerable. That's the way of Jesus, right? That's the way of Jesus when Jesus invites the children to come to him, when Jesus invites the dangerous people to come to him, when Jesus opens his arms and makes himself vulnerable for the sake of others. Because only that way is true relationship possible. Only that way is true community possible. When we become more vulnerable, it's not like we're letting down our guard or leaving ourselves defenseless. Exactly the opposite. When we connect with the world around us, that's where we find true safety, because the only true safety we can find is when we take responsibility for protecting each other. When we're in a community where we care for each other, that's true safety. It was a beautiful day. And it was a beautiful week in so many ways. I remember, this is very weird of me perhaps, but I remember a special blessedness of those early days right after the attacks. I'm a big nature lover, and for the first time maybe in my entire Chicago life, I could see just the stars in the sky without the contrails and the flashing lights of the approaching airliners coming into O'Hare. It was a time of introspection, a time where, because no one could travel, our world got smaller, but not in a claustrophobic way. It got smaller in a way that brought us closer together. I remember riding the L in those first week or two, how kind everyone was, how generous-hearted, how smiling everyone was. When was the last time you got on the L and everyone smiled at you? Well, I can tell you when. It was September 12th, September 13th, September 14th, that first week. We were in love with each other again. Our church was full. Not because we had particularly good answers. We had exactly the same answers that everyone else had, which were not very many answers at all. But everyone came together because they knew we had to be together at that time, that the only true answer was for us to be together. And we offered prayers, not of vengeance, not of brittleness, but of peace and of healing and of forgiveness. As I said, I lived on the beach. I lived right by the lakefront, and every night that week, just impromptu, people gathered on the beach, people gathered on the breakwater pier right outside of the building, just to check in with each other, just to see, are you still here? I'm still here. Can we still be here together? And we reckoned up our losses. Turns out I didn't lose anyone that day, thank God. But I know people who did, and you do too. Maybe some of you lost loved ones, friends, coworkers, spouses, parents, children. 3,000 children lost their parents that day. We reckoned up our losses together, and we held them together. And alongside of all that emerging thirst for vengeance, other things were revealed about us, that we were capable of nobility and of generosity and of faith and of community. And how much better would this awful election season be if we remembered that spirit, that longing for community, that longing for wisdom, that longing for peace. Those are the qualities that mark the spiritual people we're trying to become as children of God. Hopefully we don't always need tragedy to recover our best selves, but when tragedies occur, and of course they do, at least I pray that we will put them to good use. To be again our best and our most compassionate selves, to get back to that generous place where conservatives talk about being compassionate, where liberals talk about cooperating instead of fighting about who's more liberal than who. Let's have those be the spiritual lessons of those days. Let's yearn to see that in the mirror that the prophet holds up to us. The importance of knowing who we are and what we're capable of as children of God. The importance of looking beneath the surface of our ways. The importance of not disconnecting from each other or losing a sense of our community, but rather of embracing each other. The importance of clinging to God's vision of what is good and faithful and what a just society looks like, that peaceable reign. Because only in that way can those days of terror be reclaimed. And only in that way will we be able to remember something beautiful about them too. Amen.